This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
In short, what the president admitted to is that he is committing a crime by not having reported this act of criminality that is known to him.
That's a South African legislator Mervyn Dirk on a leaked recording in which President Cyril Ramaphosa allegedly admits he knew public funds were being used to fund some activities of the ruling ANC. Details coming up. Also, Ethiopia's cabinet has proposed lifting a six-month state of emergency ahead of time. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Some protesters in Burkina Faso are turning to Russia for help in the aftermath of this week's coup. Joseph Siegel, director of research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, says he thinks there are several reasons why the coup happened in the West African country, the latest in a string of military takeovers in Africa over the past year.
The immediate trigger is, you know, the growing concern with the spread of the militant Islamist groups from the north. And the increased violence and the displacement that that's causing. But I think that the broader reason is that we're seeing a contagion of coups from the other coups that we've seen in neighboring countries, particularly Mali and Guinea, Chad. And so it has reintroduced the idea among some military actors that they have the right and authority to intervene when they deem the governance situation isn't going in the direction that they feel is sufficiently correct.
We saw that some people in Burkina Faso today and yesterday, they were out actually celebrating after the junta takeover. Can you explain why people are happy to see the overthrow of their leader?
Well, I think we have to be really careful about making those generalizations. Following any coup, you do see some people come on the street, but there are many more who don't come out on the street. And so, yes, every country faces grievances, and these coup plotters will cite those grievances as justification for their extra constitutional action. But in fact, you know, in every instance we've seen in Africa in this recent spate of coups, the coup leaders are simply seeking power. They aren't seeking reform. They aren't seeking to remedy the various challenges that these countries face. And therefore, it's a double whammy on these countries, because not only are they losing their democratization process and constitutional rule, but they're creating a huge distraction from the real challenges that these countries face.
Well, why are some countries like this one, Burkina Faso, people in this country, not everyone, as you point out, but some people saying they're inviting Russia to come in? Why Russia?
Well, the issue of Russia is largely having to do with Mali, where the junta there is trying to prop itself up and so is bringing in mercenaries really to protect its interest. This is despite the fact that there are already nearly 20,000 United Nations peacekeepers on the ground, as well as French and international forces. So it's really a matter of regime protection. In Burkina Faso, there's all sorts of comments being made. The situation is still fluid. We really don't know all that's going on. I think it's important to recognize that, you know, this coup in Burkina Faso seems to have been not planned. It seems to have been a mutiny that then degenerated into some individuals seizing power. And so there's a lot that we don't understand. Like I said, there's growing anxiousness, there's growing fear in Burkina Faso because of the surging militant Islamist violence that the country is facing. But there are many other factors involved. Many citizens in Burkina Faso have fought hard to establish their democratic system. It is still, a work in progress, but given their long years of authoritarian rule, most Burkina Faso citizens are not going to be willing to give that up easily.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies, speaking with Carol Van Dam Falk from Washington Today. Cyclone Ana has killed at least 34 people in Madagascar, 2 in Mozambique, and 4 in Malawi, where thousands were left homeless. Malawi, which also lost power for 2 days, has deployed search and rescue teams to help people feared trapped in flood-hit areas. Lamek Matsina reports from Blantyre.
Cyclone Ana has killed at least 34 people in Madagascar, 2 in Mozambique, and 4 in Malawi, where thousands were left homeless. Malawi, which also lost power for 2 days, has deployed search and rescue teams to help people feared trapped in flood-hit areas. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre. Text. Emile Matei was sleeping at her home in the Jigawa district of southern Malawi, where the floodwaters from Cyclone Ana arrived. A single mother of one child, Matei recounts her narrow escape. She says it was around 11 p.m. I was awakened by the flooding waters from the nearby river, which surrounded my house. That night, I ran with my child to the higher ground, leaving all my property soaked in the water. Matei is among thousands of people in southern Malawi who have been made homeless by heavy rain and floods caused by Ana, which hit Malawi Sunday. The flooding has caused many houses to collapse, forcing occupants to seek refuge in churches and schools. Mateo says in her area, flood victims are sleeping on bare ground, saying someone needs to provide them with tents and other necessities. She says we have nowhere to sleep. Even the churches and the schools here are in the water. What we need most is food and clothes because all our property has been washed away. Chipililo Kamula is a spokesperson for the Department of Disaster and Management Affairs in Malawi. He says the department is still receiving assessment reports from the districts. Kamula could not specify the total number of people affected.
For now, we are still getting some reports from the councils, but the figures, they are on the higher side. Chikwawa alone has over 10,000 households displaced, and Mwanza has over 4,000 people affected.
4 people were confirmed killed as of Wednesday. Kamura says rescue efforts are underway to help others trapped in flood-hit areas.
As of yesterday, we deployed a search and rescue team comprising the Malawi Defense Force, the Malawi Police Service, Marine Department, to ensure that they rescue people feared to be trapped in Mulanje, Zomba, Chikwawa, and in Sanje.
The Department of Meteorological Services says Cyclone Ana has left the country, but warned that heavy rains would continue in some parts of southern Malawi. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
The United Nations Children's Fund estimates that around over 1 million children in eastern and southern Africa are not receiving treatment for severe wasting or the loss of muscles, mass, and weight due to acute malnutrition. Last year, UNICEF and its partners provided support for 1.5 million affected children, though the agency says 3 million children still need medical attention. It says these children failed to be treated because of a lack of resources needed to care for them. Mavis Ochera in Juwaso, in the Ashanti region of Ghana, has more on the story.
Despite gradual improvement in treating wasting in the region, the impact of COVID-19 combined with climate shocks and ongoing conflict continues to push children and families to the brink. Christine Woodette is UNICEF's regional nutrition advisor for Eastern and Southern Africa in Nairobi. She says the organization is appealing for $225 million in funding for supplies and to cover the operational costs to reach every child. She says a child with severe wasting is 9 times more likely to die than a child who is not severely affected.
It's also that the situation has got worse, and in many countries the numbers are rising, and so the resources available are just not keeping up with the situation that is leading to more and more children needing treatment.
She says there have been improvements in treating wasting in the region. For example, there are now more health facilities and trained staff. These include more community-based workers and volunteers to screen children and identify those in need of treatment. Rodette says the situation aggravating in the Horn of Africa in countries like Ethiopia, Somalia, and Kenya can be attributed to worsening drought in previous years coupled with poor rainy seasons. She says at the moment, countries in Southern Africa like Angola and Madagascar are experiencing droughts.
Some of them amplified by climate change. And then on top of it, we have situations like in Ethiopia and Somalia where there is ongoing conflict, and in northern Mozambique where families are displaced and they lose their livelihoods, of course, they lost their homes. And of course, the children then become very vulnerable. We are saying at the moment that all of these countries and these different compounding factors mean a looming nutrition tragedy in this Eastern and Southern African region.
Rodette says much more needs to be done to prevent wasting. That includes making sure that children continue to have access to health and nutrition services, as well as cash transfers and other kinds of social safety programs that help provide families with food and clean water. She says UNICEF also considers water and sanitation programs as an essential part of preventing severe wasting and improving health and nutrition. She says severely affected children should be provided with therapeutic foods which could restore their health within 6 to 8 weeks. Rodette says Angola is facing the worst recorded droughts in 40 years and has managed to scale up emergency nutrition to the most affected provinces. She says over the past 2 years, over 1 million children in Ethiopia suffered from severe wasting and were in need of life-saving treatments. Meanwhile, conflict in the northern parts of the country and a drought emergency could increase those numbers. She says nearly 7 million people in the drought-affected areas will need urgent humanitarian assistance.
We need more resources to make sure that with our partners and the government, the 500,000 children we estimate will not be able to be reached with the current resources can also receive the life-saving treatment for severe wasting.
Rodette says in South Sudan, 240,000 children were treated for wasting last year, while over 310,000 children could suffer from the illness this year. She says more support is needed for communities affected by flooding and for others affected by droughts. As in all countries affected by wasting, policies that ensure food security during emergencies are essential. Reporting for VOA, this is Mavis Autry in Drasso in the Ashanti region of Ghana.
Citing improved security conditions, Ethiopia's cabinet has proposed lifting a 6-month state of emergency ahead of time. Reuters, quoting a statement from Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's office, said the government has reached a stage where threats can be neutralized through regular law enforcement mechanisms. The cabinet's decision must be sent to Parliament for approval. Law enforcement officials in South Africa say more than 6 out of every 10 deals involving measures or equipment used to combat COVID-19 in the country in 2020 alone were irregular. In July 2020, President Cyril Ramaphosa tasked the Special Investigation Unit, or SIU, with examining COVID-19 contracts after media reports that they were racked with corruption and fraud. The SIU presented its final report to the president yesterday. Darren Taylor has more.
The unit says criminal syndicates comprising government officials, private companies and individuals stole at least 8 billion rands. That's more than $53 million in the first year of the pandemic. The SIU describes more than 2,800 contracts, many involving supply of PPE to state departments, as irregular. Its report implicates more than 1,200 service providers in corruption and other financial crimes.
We started by being surprised at the beginning, but towards the middle and to the end, it was not surprising anymore because we were able to see the patterns of what was going on and we were able to follow the money and we ended up with the results that we are seeing now.
SIU spokesperson Kaiser Khanyaho says almost half of the alleged graft happened in just one province, Gauteng, home to South Africa's biggest city, Johannesburg. The units referred almost 400 cases to the National Prosecuting Authority, the NPA. This could lead to criminal charges against hundreds of officials from the ruling African National Congress, the ANC. The SIU's list of referrals also includes a case linked to former Health Minister Dr. Zweli Mkhize. He allegedly gave a multi-million dollar COVID communications contract to friends in exchange for kickbacks.
When you do investigations where you find criminality, you must be in a position to then give that evidence to the NPA. And we are very clear that there is criminality that has happened in all the 386 cases that we are talking about. And we are already in discussions with the prosecution.
Khanyaho says he's confident the SIU Special Tribunal will be able to recover at least 2 billion rands of the stolen COVID funds.
We've got the case here that involves the South African Health Laboratory Services, where we need to recover about 176 million rand.
He says some syndicates were so brazen that they continued stealing after Ramaphosa publicly announced that the SIU was probing COVID-related spending.
People never thought that anybody will come looking, because at that time there was an excitement around the issues that says it's an emergency, we need to just make sure that we do things, we're not going to follow procurement processes. They took advantage of that, but they went beyond it, because even when there's an emergency, there are still rules that need to be followed.
The SIU found that most companies had no track record supplying healthcare equipment or services. Some of the firms were fake. Others were set up virtually overnight. Sometimes they delivered overpriced but substandard masks and gloves. Sometimes they delivered nothing but were still paid.
People were just sending SMSs and then they were given contract without following any process. It was laser spare.
Khanyaho says a particularly memorable case involved renovations to a hospital at a mine near the town of Coltonville.
The budget was 50 million rand, but it ended up being 500 million rand, and only 8 people ever slept in that hospital after it was renovated.
The SIU report has been hailed by civil society groups as one of the most significant revelations yet of how graft in government, facilitated by the private sector, is flourishing in South Africa. It's also stark proof, they say, that the country's health sector is polluted with hundreds of corrupt officials who go to work not to improve healthcare, but to steal public money. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Uganda on Monday lifted its two-year COVID-19 curfew, allowing bars and night spots to reopen. Excited revelers celebrated the end of one of the world's longest lockdowns. Halima Tumani reports from Kampala.
Reveler who only identified herself as Peace says she has been drinking every night of the lockdown. Uganda imposed the nighttime curfew in March 2020 in a bid to limit the spread of the coronavirus, which has led to about 3,500 deaths in the country. Every night, businesses had to shut down at 7 p.m. and no cars were allowed on the streets. Peace tells VOA that during the lockdown, she ventured into bars owned by government employees that continued to operate in secret but charged high prices for beer. Excited, she says she's happy she can now drink at her favorite local bar.
But I'm glad, like, they opened, I can manage to go out, I can freely move with a border, or I can drive. Like, here, beer, 3 beers at 10,000. So if I move up to 50,000, I can spend the whole night. Where the money there? Tell me where
the money there? Where the money there? The government lifted the curfew on Monday, but some restrictions remain. Anyone wandering into a bar or restaurant must wear a mask and show their COVID vaccination card. Fred Enanga, the Uganda police spokesperson, cautioned the public to adhere to the health and safety protocols if they do not want to return to curfew.
Therefore, it is important that all proprietors and managers in nightlife and the night economy carefully manage the reopening of their businesses in the safest possible way. Where possible, they can have ventilation systems in all venues, sanitation stations throughout the venues.
Chris, a manager at the High Five Bar in Kampala, is hoping to recover the losses he has incurred in the last 2 years. Mandy's business was disappointing, he says. He didn't get as many customers as he wished. The real challenge, he says, could be implementing the safety measures.
It has been 2 long years without operating. It is difficult really to tell everybody, show me your vaccination card or certificate. Nonetheless, we have sanitizer. All the waitresses are vaccinated and we believe we are ready.
As Uganda attempts to return to normalcy, including the nightlife, statistics from the Ministry of Health show that as of Sunday, the country had recorded about 160,000 cases of COVID-19. About 12.5 million people have been vaccinated, well short of the government's target of 20 million. Halima Athmani for VA News, Kampala, Uganda.
Morocco came from behind to beat Malawi 2-1. In the last of 16 of the Africa Cup of Nations match yesterday. According to a Reuters report, the win puts Morocco on course for its first African title in 45 years. Egypt and Ivory Coast are battling today, with the winner playing Morocco in the quarterfinals. You can get more on the Africa Cup of Nations coverage from the Sunny Side of Sports. Listen at voanews.com or find the show wherever you get your podcasts. Also, keep track of the latest on Sunny's Twitter feed at VOA Sunny Sports. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehius Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05.